Broadcasting live from the KHMB studios in downtown Half Moon Bay. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. The Coastside's own live call-in talk radio show. From Pescadero to Pacifica and beyond. This is the place for Coastside issues, hot topics, and you. And now, the host of Coastal Windage, Mr. Ruben Truthmaker, and his co-host, Crystalyn.
All right, good morning, Coastsiders. Big day. Let's get right to it. It's Friday, D-Day, June 6, 2025, 81 years ago. I just watched in kind of D-Day's a big day. If you know, the invasion of Europe in World War II to take the beachhead. I just watched the first half hour of Saving Private Ryan last night. If you've seen that, that is an intense half hour of film in which it really, I feel like, one of the few war movies that kind of captures like the absolute all-encompassing terror that a person must feel like as they're entering into a war zone. When they're in that transport boat and the gate is up and they can't see anything and they're just sitting there and they're being transported to the beach, and then they start to hear the weapons fire, the camera pans around to the guys who did great acting, and the looks on their faces just capture that fear. And then as the door comes down and just like there's a machine gunner just shooting them down right at the gate of that is just I found myself ducking as I was watching that sequence. Like, it's just so terrifying. And so there were some comments by some political people this week about D-Day and to the German chancellor about how it was not a good day for the Germans. It's a day that needs to be remembered like Pearl Harbor, like 9/11, like any of these major days in world and American history. It's a day not to be forgotten, or to be forgotten of what happened there that day. Thousands and thousands of people were killed. All right, so that's D-Day. That's today, 81 years ago. Let's just take a moment to remember that. Okay. I'm sorry to start with that, but it is D-Day, and I was really upset by some of the comments that people were bandying about. 81 years later, it's easy to forget the importance of history and historical events and the sacrifices that people made. And then I just happened to watch that movie last night, and like, wow, that is just an intense 30 minutes of film. Okay, also intense is how overjoyed Crystalyn and I are that today we have renowned Coastside artist and muralist Julie Engelman with us. Julie, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Woohoo!
So thrilled to have you on, because your artwork is incredible. I love your artwork. I love that you're a Coastside person. I love seeing your artwork around, and you're working on a new mural, which is awesome, right here on Main Street at the IDES Hall. We'll talk about that in the back half of the show. But you've taken time off. You're wearing your painting jumpsuit with paint splotches on it from the work that you've been doing there at the IDES Hall. You've taken time off to come and chat with us for an hour. So appreciate that. Okay. Other topics today are trolls with flags graduate to crosswalks. I may have to punt that because there was a couple of mini rants in there.
Okay.
That I may have to punt because there's a huge rant that's just like stuck in my throat right now that I need to like get out.
Okay.
We'll clear that in just a second. We may not have time for trolls with flags graduate to crosswalks, but hopefully. And then Coastal Windage Season 8 finale. You know what? If we have to cut something, it'll be that. Even though I know people love hearing the season ending stats, right? Who can't get enough Coastal Windage stats, right? Okay. So, Ruben, what's your beef?
Wait, air quality report.
Oh, okay. All right. Good.
It's our one steadfast thing.
This is our calling card. This is what makes Coastal Windage.
You're the one that proclaims every Friday about how we're the only ones in the history of the world of the universe.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, we are. That's a good point. Yes. Okay, air quality report. As Crystalyn said, we're the only radio program in the history of broadcast radio to ever bring you the live air quality report. Here we go. 0 to 50 is incredible on the scale. 51 to 100 is pretty good. Beyond that, it doesn't matter to us. We never are there except if there's a fire. So today in El Granada, it's 18, our usual, 18 in Half Moon Bay. Awesome. 28 in Redwood City, 23 in Santa Cruz, and today in Charlottesville, Virginia, which Charlottesville has kind of a bad reputation since 2017, but that's just where today's action is involved. So today in Charlottesville, Virginia, 77. I mean, that's still in the good range. We're just so spoiled. Okay, so what's my beef, you ask? Oh, thank you for asking. Okay, last night, as I'm going into my bathroom, my wife, Mrs. Truthmaker, goes to bed earlier than I do, so I try to be quiet, and I just go about the house in the dark. So I brush my teeth in the dark and whatever. It's also a better look for me. It's better if I'm not looking in the mirror with the light on. So anyways, I'm in the bathroom brushing my teeth. I walk in there, and I am blinded by a flashing blue light coming through my bathroom window. I look out the window. It's down at the harbor somewhere. This is different than there's navigation lights and stuff that are on the foghorn structure and other things out there. This is a obnoxious flashing blue thing, like flashing kind of like on almost not a strobe, but like quicker than just like flash, but like flash, 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 super bright in like within 2 minutes. And I was trying not to look at it, but it was just overwhelming the bathroom space because I was looking right down at it, about over a quarter mile away, but still gave me a headache within 2 minutes. Okay. So I went to bed. Fortunately, it wasn't in the bedroom window. But I was thinking, like, anybody that's along Avenue Alhambra, anybody, people that have been complaining about the fire department lights and the potential lights at El Granada Elementary are going to lose their minds on this thing. Hadn't heard anything about it. Don't know anything about it. Contacted, checked next door. Is somebody complaining on next door? I figured there would be. Like, hey, what's the blue light? No, nothing on next door. So I have to ask myself, what would Michelle Dragony do, right? What would Coastal Butterfly do? So I get on the phone. I call it Harbor District because it's on Harbor District property. I notice it's in a mobile trailer that you would tow behind a truck, 15-foot pole, these two lights on there. It's still on today, right now. It's just that it's daylight, so the flashing is not as noticeable. It's on the vacant lot north of Sam's, Harbor District property. So I call Harbor District. Two calls. Nobody knows anything about it. So check it out. Call me back. They call me back, and I get a call back from Dante at the Harbor District. I really appreciate Dante and Melanie and Betty at the Harbor District for helping me solve this mystery. And at first, the first two people didn't know anything about it. Dante called back. This is a because the salmon season is open for 2 days this weekend. The Harbor District is expecting a flood of people. He said this is a worst-case scenario in terms of traffic and everybody here for 2 days of salmon season. It's only open for 2 days, a two-day opening. This is a camera to monitor boat launches at the boat launch and the amount of boats entering and leaving the harbor. This is a NOAA camera, so it's a federal agency camera. The Harbor District helped them set it there, but has no control over it. Dante, who spoke to me, said that he helped identify the location. I said, okay, but Dante, did you look at it at night? Did you look at it from El Granada? He's like, this is the only place it can be where it can see the boat ramp and the entrance to the harbor. I said, but did anybody look at it at night from El Granada? And the answer was no. And I said, because if you did...
Did they know that there was going to be a flashing light going on no. the whole time?
Dante said this is a NOAA installation, a NOAA trailer with the lights. He knew there was going to be a camera because that's what it was for. Didn't know it was going to be these bright lights.
Yeah.
So maybe it's because it's 15 feet. It's lower than the telephone poles and stuff. So I don't know why they would need that. You know, it's not like a helicopter is going to run into it or anything. It's not that high. It's only like
15 feet.
I'm going to
guess that the flash is like the flash on your camera. And if it's taking pictures to catch the boats going up or down the ramp, at night, especially, it's going to need a flash to catch it.
Well, let me tell you how bright that light would have to be to catch pictures of the boats going in and out of the harbor entrance way over there. That's how bright this light is. So I said, can we move it? Can't be moved. It's NOAA. Dante was helpful with information, but the bottom line is, no, nothing's going to be done about it. And I said, okay. he was like, it's 2 days, can't you live with that? And I said, well, I guess part of it is no notification. Just it's there. And now I got to track this down. What is it? And the first two people I talk about, nobody knows anything about it. It's on Harbor District property. So I'm really pleased that Dante called me back and the response I got from the Harbor District. I'm very displeased that no notification was given to the community. And really, whether it was NOAA or Harbor District or the two of them together, no consideration to what this is going to do to the people of El Granon. And I say this because Dante was saying, well, it's about the fishery and the opening and saving the harbor and the health of the harbor. I understand and appreciate that. But the Harbor District is also talking about a parking lot in El Granada for the Harbor District, again, with apparently no consideration for what this is going to do to the people of El Granada and the people that live across the street in El Granada. So this is two things now where the people that live right across the street from the harbor are not even being involved in the discussion or given any consideration. And the Harbor District, this is a NOAA thing, so that's what Dante said, but...
So I do, okay, so I'm going to separate this from the parking lot. I do think that's two very different things.
Well, they're both Harbor District involved, and they're both negatively affect people in El Granada.
But one's a two-day thing, and one is a long-term thing. Yeah, so in that regard, I'm going to separate them.
Yes.
So, and this is not going to probably be popular opinion.
With me or just in general?
With the world.
Uh-oh.
But I do find it interesting, and I do acknowledge that the light was bright and jarring and all of those things. Definitely if it was a long-term thing, I could 100% see, like, wanting to have it handled. It's a commercial fisher harbor, and I... With people who get upset over the foghorn or the different parts of the harbor that are needed to conduct the business of the harbor, of the fishing vessels. Those are businesses. Those are people's livelihoods. And it's just always a little bit dismaying to me when people get really up in arms that they live near a working commercial harbor and then get mad at the things that have to happen at the harbor. Now, I fully am on board with some kind of notice going out. They could have put something out on Nextdoor. Hey, the camera's here for 2 days. I will not excuse that. I am a huge fan of communication, and many of our agencies have a real hard time communicating in good time. But I will hope that there's some grace extended for the salmon season that's been cut significantly short. And many fishermen are going bankrupt because of the salmon season being cut short. And if we continue to make it harder to do fishing, Pillar Point Harbor is going to end up going away.
I mean, I'll just say, but nobody's going to ask the question of, like, why are the salmon going away? I mean, you know, like... Okay, I understand. It's a working harbor. I understand that when I moved into El Granada. But this is not part of the regular machinations of a working harbor. This has never happened before. I've lived in El Granada for over 20 years. This flashing blue beacon has never been there before. With the amount of uproar that's been going on in El Granada with the lights at the fire station and El Granada Elementary, to have something like this just seems like kind of a thumb in the eye. Like, we don't care. Agencies have shown they don't care. People here on the coastside value dark skies, and this was jarring. I accept Dante's explanation. It's a two-day thing. Okay, that does make me feel better. Like, okay, you can handle almost anything for a couple of days. I get that. But to not give any notification, and two, to then have a kind of a perspective of, like, hey, fishermen are the most important. The fishing is the most important. Everything is about this, and you just need to go away. I don't appreciate that.
No, it's not that. It's when you moved into your house, did Pillar Point Harbor exist?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so these people have moved in next to a working harbor or next to a firehouse or next to a school, and then they want...
No, the firehouse was not there.
When that neighborhood was built?
No, that's a new firehouse.
No, sorry, not the El Granada one. I'm thinking of the Moss Beach one.
Okay.
But and I experienced this when I was in high school. My high school was built near the end of a development, and we had football lights, you know, football field lights. And then a developer came in, put in a row, you know, put in new houses, and immediately, and this was back in 1995, the neighborhood came for our lights. And it's like, but you move in next to these things. You've made a choice to live near these beautiful assets that we have. And then systematically, over time, people want to dismantle them.
But that's not exactly analogous to this situation. Like, nobody's asking for a dismantling and everything. Somebody, well, all we're asking for is notification.
It's communication, which I totally get. But I just, like, and again, I agree that the communication end of it was obviously terrible. But things, just sometimes things have to happen at the harbor or at different places where there is a congregation of businesses for them to do business. And sometimes it's just not going to jive perfectly with the
well, this is,
neighborhoods.
I mean, this is what Dante was saying. And he was saying that he comes from a long family of fishermen and whatever. And I appreciate that. But that's his perspective. And I would say, like, let's not get into a urinating match about, like, what brings in more money to the county, commerce at the Harbor District or property taxes in El Granada or whatnot, okay? Because there's a lot of people paying a lot of money to live in El Granada and paying taxes and whatnot.
Sure.
And so, like, let's not, like I said, let's not get into a fight about what is more valuable and who has priority here, the fishermen at Pillar Point Harbor or the people that live across the street, because that's not going to be good for anybody.
True.
Right?
True,
and,
yeah.
And that's what I'm saying of, like, I think people in El Granada can figure out how to live with the lights or deal with stuff if they're brought into it as a partner in the situation or given some consideration. And what I'm saying is, whether it's the El Granada Fire Station, at the MCC meeting, the lights for the El Granada Elementary, the project people on that seem to really be listening and doing their best, so that's appreciated. And maybe as a result of the furor over the El Granada Fire Station lights. But this kind of thing is, again, just like, you know, it feels like a thumb in the eye of, like, you know, you over there in El Granada, you knew that the ocean was here and the harbor was here and the airport was here. So you have no, you know, nothing to complain about. And I'm just saying, like, just bring us in, include us in this, give us some heads up. It was jarring because that's one of the reasons I got on the phone. What is this thing? How long is it going to be there? Who authorizes it? Is it permanent? Is it temporary? You know, these are all questions that if there had been some kind of communication done ahead of time, it'd be like, oh, there's the beacon camera for the salmon season. Great. It'll be gone on Sunday. But not knowing that.
Yeah.
And with this history of other light, invasive light stuff, what's going on at Seton Coastside Hospital as well, people have a short fuse on the lighting situation. And then to just, you know, not be told about it and then told to, you know, deal with it doesn't feel good. And so that's my complaint. Again, Harbor District people, Betty, Melanie, Dante, appreciate the callbacks and the information gathering. Really appreciate that. And now we've been able to tell people what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And for the rest of the weekend, people in El Granada can close their blinds or not worry about it. It'll be gone on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. Okay, so I guess we've made some progress on something. Julie, for your murals, do you have big, like, light stanchions? Do you work at night on those murals?
No, I don't work at night. I just, like, paint during the day. Sometimes, like, for this project, I did work the first night I worked at night because I used a projector to project these outlines onto the wall, kind of like how a tattoo artist would,
right,
you know, put, like, a stencil on your body. They would print out just like the outlines of the design and they would put that on your body and then they would like shade it in. I kind of do the same thing, but I use like a projector. If I mean, the IDS parking lot, I have like so much room to like back up a projector that worked out perfectly. And it was actually really fun that night. And there was like a bunch of people like hanging out, which was usually I'm just doing this like alone, like at night on the street. So it was nice having people there. So that's really the only time I work at night. But other than that, I just work during like when the sun's up and when it's not too windy.
Yeah. So wind, does that, do you apply with a brush? Do you apply with a sprayer? Like, would the wind, like, spatter the paint? Or is it just unpleasant working in the wind?
Well, yeah, it's both. It's unpleasant. And I do use, like, a lot of spray paint. So that mural over there is probably, like, 80% spray painted right now. And if it's really windy, it's just, like, you spray it out of the can and then it just goes onto another spot on the wall. Because, you know, or it just turns into a cloud. And flies away, or you know, or like the can sometimes drips, and then it'll like the wind will like take it and like land it on a spot. That
I'm just saying, you might think of like next time you have a mural, doing it in the wind as like an abstract. You know,
oh, there
like,
you go,
like a Monet,
yeah,
or something,
right?
A Monet
just
mural.
Splatter
like,
paint everywhere.
Is it me or is that mural like really fuzzy? Like, no, it's intentional.
The collab with the wind.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, there you go. Uh-huh. You're welcome, Julie. That's
there you go.
Okay, that's the full extent of my artistic inspiration and ability.
Nice.
Okay. If you have a thought about the light beacon or Julie or other things that we're going to talk about today, which, my goodness, the time flies, give us a call, 650-560-9851. While you ponder that, Crystalyn, you are killing it lately. You're kind of the MC of the Coast Side lately. I mean, and I want to say, like, so you did Pause in the Park, which,
yes,
by all accounts was a phenomenal success.
Like, yes, they did such a great job.
Yeah, it just sounds like it was amazing. And you got a ton of love on Nextdoor about it. But 2 weeks in a row, baby goats and adorable dressed up dogs. Can life get any cuter for you?
No. They are, no, to be fair, if I could just lay down in the middle of my office and get attacked by puppies, that would be,
and baby goats,
like at the, like that would be pretty awesome, because I didn't really get to interact with the dogs too much in that I was just, you know, helping usher them to the arena and being Cruella de Vil for 4 hours, but it was really, really fun, and some people really like dressed up with their dogs, and that was really cool. And having like the little kids with their dog and getting their dog to do a trick and all these like fun little categories was pretty cool.
It sounds like a lot of fun. And again, they couldn't have picked a better person to be the MC of that. And I think it's really fun and cool that you're getting a lot of calls from people to like be the MC, because you are the perfect person to be an MC at any kind of event.
Oh, thank you. It's actually a dream come true for me. That was, you know how you have kind of like, I don't necessarily want to say your bucket list, but there's just things on your list that it's like, oh, I just really wish I could do that. So hosting and MCing is one of those things that's was on my list. I'm a huge fan of stand-up comedy, and pre-pandemic was slated to take some stand-up comedy classes, and mainly just to help with on stage storytelling and handling stage fright and things like that. So this was, getting that call was just a dream, totally a dream come true.
Well, very cool. And speaking of dreams come true, that's what we do here on Coastal Windage. I saw this on Nextdoor. People are looking for tickets for the San Mateo County Fair, which ends this weekend, and it's been going for the last week and this week. So I saw Nextdoor, people are desperately seeking tickets to the county fair. I hold in my hand
physical paper.
Paper tickets, which it's going to be hard to peel my hands off of these. Two paper tickets and a parking pass.
That's the coveted piece.
Right? And a program to the fair, so you know what you're looking at. To the first caller, 650-560-9851. If you're looking for tickets to the San Mateo County Fair, this is the place. Give us a call. First caller gets two tickets, a parking pass, and a complimentary program.
Okay. At least 200 people are still asleep because of grad night last night.
Right. Let's get to that. Grad night. So Half Moon Bay High School graduation was yesterday. I mean, it's a time of joy and a time of sentimentality. Not sadness, but just another class of Coastside kids hitting the real world. And for me personally, this hits because my son is a junior. So these are all not all, but lots of kids that I know that I've seen since they were little tiny kids, some of whom I can't even recognize anymore. I'd be walking down the halls, "Hey, Ruben," and it's just like, "Oh my God!" Like,
well, you're so tall.
Big now. Yes, you're so big now. You've got a beard, or you know, like your hair is totally long. Oh my goodness! It's a bit, as an old person, like it's just kind of like mirror in your face of like, look. All these young, fresh faces that are hitting the world, and you are not that.
Well, for me, it was funny because, you know, being 5'4", you know, you're kind of running through life a little bit shorter than most. And I remember, like, very distinctly having a feeling as a freshman looking at these huge seniors. And so when I walked into grad night early this morning for my security shift, I literally felt like a freshman in high school because, again, I was just, like, looking up at these six-foot-tall boys and girls that I'm like, I'm supposed to be older than you and more mature and all of these things, and all I feel is, like, a teeny tiny little freshman.
Yeah. I mean, my son is much taller than me now, and so I get that every day. Exactly. While you're trying to then be the voice of reason and the voice of authority, and you know, the looking up thing, I think, is the thing that like kind of takes away some of your, you know, gravitas in terms of like, no, I'm in charge here. Okay. But I want to say shout out to Kate Shea, Don Novarina, and Vanessa Love, the organizers of Grad Night. They were on our show in January to talk about it. All of the volunteers, like Crystalline, it's an amazing thing. It's a wonderful thing for our seniors. I was thinking about volunteering, but I did not. Yesterday was Mrs. Truthmaker's birthday, so we went out for dinner. Our son joined us, and then he jetted off down to see the rest of graduation and then see his friends before they went to grad night. So that grad night's an amazing thing. Thank you again to Kate, Dawn, and Vanessa, and to all the volunteers. And I hope the graduates really enjoyed themselves last night.
And fun kudos to many of the parents that were there volunteering. Were volunteering because their kid is a junior or sophomore, and they wanted to pay it forward, but they don't want to work on the grad night that their kid is at. So I thought that was a really sweet, like, forward-thinking thing. Like, I'm just going to volunteer for the 2 and 3 years leading up to it.
That was my thought, too, and I asked my son about it, and he was just, you know, he's like, well, I definitely don't want you doing it next year. And I would, you know, I'm not thrilled about you doing it this year because I've got so many friends there. I'm like, come on. They all know me, you know, like I'm cool, right? Crickets. Yeah, exactly. Wait a minute. Why is everybody laughing? Why is everybody in this room laughing right now? Not really. Whoa. Okay, cut Frank off of the coffee, please.
Okay. Lots, to be fair. Lots of the parents knew lots of the kids, including their own, and it seemed like a good vibe.
Okay. You know what else is a good vibe? Skipping a couple things here down to trolls. Per artist, at Filoli, starting today, Filoli Gardens over the hill in San Carlos there, there's an exhibit called Trolls Save the Humans by Danish artist and dumpster diver Thomas Dambo. He has created these giant 15-foot-tall troll structures. If you go on the Coastal Windage webpage on the KHMBRadio.com website, there's some pictures of them. Or go to Filoli, check that out. 6 15-foot-tall trolls made out of recycled and reclaimed items that are hidden in the trees in Filoli.
That's so cool.
And he's done these installations in 17 different countries across the world. This installation will be there through November. These trolls are really cute, and they're gigantic.
That means they'll be there for Halloween. That'll be cool. Oh, let's see what they do with them for that.
No, these trolls are amazing. Julie, you should check them out. They're really... you, as an artist, you'd be like, oh, I look at him and just overwhelmed and awestruck. And you would probably be more technical of like, wow, I wonder how that was done or how, you know, what his thought process was. Anyways, it's called Trolls Save the Humans. And this is at Filoli Natural Lands through November, starting today. Okay. While you ponder that, we'll take a word. We'll take a moment for a word from our sponsor.
This is Community Radio for the Coast Side. 100.9 KHMB. Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
Hi, this is Jay Michaels. Make sure to join me and Stan Warren Luttrell coming up at 10 o'clock right after Coastal Windage. We'll have a look at today in history, plus we'll get to a brand new forgotten find. It all happens at 10 a.m. right here from 100.9 FM KHMB.
All right, and we're back. Ruben here with Crystalyn and renowned muralist and fine artist Julie Engelman, Frank the engineer, the interns, and the suits over there. I don't know, marketing manager, some sales manager, some kind of managers. It's the last show of the season. Just in 1 minute to recap, this is the season finale of season eight. Eight seasons. We're up to 317 shows over eight seasons, 39 episodes, new episodes this season, including 13 in our inaugural summer mic series. So that's 53 episodes in 52 weeks. Thank you. Do the math on that one. And let's see, the last thing I confirmed by data once again for the eighth season in a row, Crystalyn, Coastal Windage has come in as the top rated live call-in talk radio show on the coast side. That's eight seasons in a row. Yeah, exactly. I know, you're stunned. Don't worry about the methodology or where the data comes from. It's data. I'm saying it out loud. That's good enough. Okay.
Yes.
Moving on. Let's talk about Summer Mic Series starts next week with Michelle Dragony. We'll start the second annual Summer Mic Series.
Woohoo!
A incredible upgrade to the Summer Mic Season, Summer Mic Series, is you're going to be there. You're going to be the co-host. So it's going to be a guest co-host, and you will be co-hosting the show every week this summer. That's going to be amazing.
It's going to be really fun. I'm excited.
Yeah, it is going to be really fun. I'm excited, too, for you and for our guest hosts. Okay, Julie Engelman. If you want to see Julie's art, go to artbyjule.com, artbyjule.com, and you can see Julie's just incredible artwork. Julie, we had you on our season 6 premiere episode September 9th, 2022. People want to go listen to that on khmbradio.com. At that time, you're working on the incredible mural on Cunha General Store in celebration of the Pumpkin Festival, of which you won you were selected to do that mural. And I believe you got, I want to say, $30,000 for that mural, which seems low given, because
that's
here's
a lot of work.
I know, yeah. And right, it seems low because, as Crystal and I discussed last week and in the preceding 2 weeks in our debate about what iconic or icon means, we both agreed it has become an iconic piece of the coastside.
Mm-hmm.
That is fully recognizable immediately as something on the coastside. Crystal said she's seen people taking pictures mm-hmm. in front of it and posting on Reddit or whatever that, you know, it is now something like, to me, and I think to Crystalyn too, like Johnston House or the golf ball at Pillar Point or whatever, where it's just like it is now synonymous with Coastside.
Wow.
And I think that's really cool. Goes to the power of the design and the artwork. I mean, do you just like swell with pride every time you walk by it? Or you just have so many that it's like, yeah.
Well, no, I just like, I'm just sometimes like really self-critical about my own work. And so sometimes when I like look at it, I'm like, well, maybe I could have done this or that. But so I try to like drive or walk by and not like overly like look at it for too long. But it does really make my day when I see people like still taking photos from across the street and like posing for selfies and like little kids over there, you know, like trying to sit on like the pumpkin painting or whatever. It just warms my heart. And like what you said, that like means a lot, that it's kind of synonymous with the coast side.
Yeah.
So
and I want to note that if anybody is on Instagram, check out Julie's Instagram, Art by Jewel, I think
yeah,
is the tag.
Yeah.
Because she's got amazing murals all over, including Placerville,
yeah.
Which is really fun. And so they're just gorgeous. And then when you're not working on murals, you work on other art pieces like painting beautiful flowers on mirrors and
yes.
all kinds of fun yeah. stuff. So it's super creative.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's funny that you mentioned the Placerville one because the two women that hired me for that project found me through the Cunha store mural. And they're like, oh, we want one kind of like that with themes of agriculture and kind of like the history, but more like Placerville. So I have like a woman picking apples and there's like a gold miner in it. And there's like a landscape of, you know, like the El Dorado Hills and like a river. And that's one of my best works. And I'm just like grateful to have
and that one you did in I think 190 and 100 degree heat. I sent my mom to bring you iced tea
and a sweet tea that kept me going. Yeah, no, that was great. That was like I still remember like that sweet tea because like a lot of people brought me gifts, but I do remember the sweet tea. Yeah, that like totally like was a game changer. It was so hot.
Yeah.
Luckily I was in the shade for most of the time, but I just had to get that project done before I started this other one, and the people who hired me were like super amazing, and they like put me up in like this Airbnb, so I was like really comfortable during the project. But the painting, I was like literally painting in like 110 degree heat on corrugated metal too. So when the sun would hit the wall, which should be around like 2 or 3 in the afternoon, it would just be like
molten
untouchable.
Lava.
Yeah, untouchable. Yeah.
So does that affect how the paint sticks or adheres to the... Does it affect what you have to do as an artist to get it to look the way you want it to look?
Yeah, so because it was on a corrugated surface, I was kind of forced to make that one 100% out of spray paint because if I had a brush to the corrugated surface, it would not make a straight line, just by how, you know, you kind of use the surface of the wall to steady your hand a little bit. And, but the spray paint, you can just spray, you're kind of, you're removed from the wall, you know? And so you can make straighter lines and do blends and stuff a little bit easier. But it didn't really affect the heat of the metal didn't really affect the spray paint too much. And I was in the shade for most of the day, so it was, you know, it was workable. But the corrugation was a challenge because there was faces in the design.
Right.
And so when I would be up in the lift and I'd be painting a face, I'd be like, okay, this looks good. And then when I would start to lower in the lift, the corrugation would start to warp it just based on the angle that you're looking at the face. If you're like on ground level, the corrugation would kind of change. And, you know, faces are so, you know, detailed, and you have to have like all these little details can just affect the, you know, the expression or kind of like the tone that you're going for. So, the woman in the painting, every time I would lower in the lift, she would start to get this like weirdest little smile that I hated every time I would lower. And so I kept like tweaking it and tweaking it and tweaking it. And then I finally got where, I liked it, but it was definitely very challenging to work on that.
I haven't seen that one.
It's gorgeous.
No doubt. I'm fully sold on that. I'm thinking of the under the Pacifica Pier mural that you did on the cotton crustacean.
Yeah.
Again, just what just overwhelms me is one, the detail and like the precision, but also kind of what you were saying of like, having no artistic ability, I'm amazed at how artists can do something that they have to do up close because you have to put hands on to do it, but that is meant to look at from a long ways away in that perspective, whether it's historical things. Like I was just watching a thing last night on Versailles in the gardens outside. And like when you look at it from a drone shot or an airplane, you're like, oh, look how perfectly they're laid out and all these fleur-de-lis designs and the grass and everything. But then they had a shot of the down on the ground. It's like, yeah, you can see some stuff, but like the grand in totality of it and how it all fits together so perfectly and lined up. Like, I just don't get it. Or the Nazca lines in Peru. Like, how you know, when we fly 10,000 feet up, we can see all these lines and how they're perfectly laid out in straight lines and make a dragonfly or a hummingbird or whatever. How did they do that 2,000 years ago when they're on the ground placing stones? Same thing with a mural. When you're right up there, you know, putting the paint on, it looks one way. And then, as you said, as you're moving down in the lift, it looks different. And from 100 feet, from 10 feet away, from 50 feet away, from 100 feet away, how do you maintain that perspective when you're right up there, like 2 feet away? I just don't understand. It's incomprehensible to me. You must have, like, artists must have this vision of where they're able to, like, zone in and pull back and see it from so many different perspectives in their mind.
Yeah, that's actually like one of my most frequent questions I get asked when people like come up to me when I am painting these murals. And I just like tell them, you know, start small and just like work in chunks, really. And then it all really does come together. And I feel like when you're painting in big scale, like don't really like focus on like the smaller details. Focus on like the bigger stuff, like the contrast and the darks and the lights and the shapes of things. And then it just... I don't know. It just comes together, and it's practice, too, and just kind of getting used to, like, the perspective changes when you're right up close against the wall and when you're 50 feet back. So.
I'm smiling because, Julie, you might as well be trying to tell me how to do a brake job on my car. I'm just like, okay, I'll take your word for it.
But, like, the art brain, I think, is so... It's vastly different, but so similar to, like, the engineering brain.
Huh.
Like, you can look at something... And just immediately start visualizing and, like, doing, like, you know, in the movies, the little blue calculation math things and are appearing. And it's how I imagine, like, you know, architects and engineers when they see something and then immediately they start putting it together. Like, there's something kind of magical about brains like that that can see things where things don't exist and then create it and be like, I literally, like, you started with zero. You started with nothing and made this beautiful, and you're to the point about your faces and the people, like, they're almost photorealistic. Like, it's clearly a beautiful painting, but it's almost photorealistic, and you're doing it like at the one at the Placerville, like the size of her face is like the size of me. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, this perspective of, like, so you're yeah, when you look at it from 100 feet away, it's like, oh, it looks like a person. But when you're up close, yeah, the person's face is 6 feet tall. How do you keep that all in perspective so that she doesn't have, like, a, you know, like a lantern jaw chin and, like, a tiny little forehead? And then you're like, have you ever done that where you, like, you painted something and then you went 100 feet away and was like, ooh, no, no.
Oh, yeah. No, that happens all the time.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, to an extent, you can kind of, like, you know, tweak things. And, you know, like in the Placerville one that happened to her face, like, 3 or 4 times, just given, like, the corrugation and just, like, how it all, like, warped. And I just, like, I tweaked that face, like, maybe, like, 3 or 4 times. And I was like, no, maybe this is, like, a little bit more here. And maybe need to, like, chisel it down there. And, you know, I step back a lot and go back to the wall and then step back, and it's just like a constant back and forth.
Do you have a Fitbit that monitors your steps?
I wish. Yeah.
Okay, you need to get on it.
I need to get that.
Get a Fitbit sponsorship.
Right? Yeah, sponsor me.
We need to have a Fitbit sponsor. We need to have a podcast, like, following you from, like, ideation to completion of a project. I think that would be really interesting.
Well, one thing I want to...
Maybe Ranger could help her with that.
I was on the... I was on the committee helping commission the Cunha mural.
Mm-hmm.
And
thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think there was 8 of us. And it was so interesting because I'm sure you as the original artist will see something different. However, seeing those initial, just what were supposed to be rough concepts come in, like, what is on the wall is so close to what the original draft concept was. Like, it's crazy. Like, literally, like, the thing that was on this, like, little sheet of paper, her mural was heads and tails, more detailed and flowy, versus many of the other ones. And all great concepts, but they just didn't quite have that photo collage quality that Julie's mural does. they were a little bit more hard-edged, and hers came and it had this very organic feel to it, and that was translated just on paper on a rough draft. And so to see a final thing that is so close to that is really, really like amazing. That just comes out of your head, like,
yeah,
easy peasy.
I feel like that's something that needs more thought and consideration of, like, it's not just the execution of, like, this is somebody that can paint and make these incredible designs. Like, you conceived these designs, right? I mean, that's another part of it. It's just like, I wish that I had this inspiration, this talent, because, okay, how long does it take you to go from ideation to completion of a project this size? Let's say the mural that you're working on at the IDS Hall. From the first, like, hey, we're doing a mural, submit a design, and you've got to think about what it is, to completion of, like, the last brush stroke, you know, mic drop or paintbrush drop.
Yeah, right, yeah. Champagne.
How long does that take?
Oh, it all depends on, you know, the size of the wall, the detail involved, and kind of what the person who's hiring you kind of wants out of the project. And I would say that the design, creating the design itself, is the most time consuming, and the most work goes into creating something that just like fits the goals of the project and it looks good, like where it is on the wall, and it just blends and fits. And there's also I'll send a draft to like a client, and then they'll like give me like an edit or something. And, you know, there might be like 3 or 4 edits, or the first draft could be perfect, you know? And so that also kind of like adds to the timeline too. But yeah, for the Pumpkin Festival mural, I spent so much time creating that design, and you were so helpful. You were like the most helpful person, and you had all the little posters
Julie's
brought out.
Julie's talking to Crystal. Right? not to me, yeah. No, to Crystal. Yes.
But yeah, I really wanted to just have all like the whole color palette of that mural, and really warm tones of like autumn to really represent the season of the Pumpkin Festival. So all the colors in that are like oranges and browns and maybe some like dark rustic green colors, and just keeping it very earth tones. And then just like bringing in pieces of, you know, just all the agriculture and sunflowers, which is kind of like the flower of Half Moon Bay. And I just like kind of had a list of all these things that really represent Half Moon Bay and the Pumpkin Festival and the history and the culture, just bringing that all into one piece. And I think the most challenging part of that mural, it was to represent like all the cultures here, because Half Moon Bay is kind of like a melting pot of so many different cultures, you know. And I didn't really specifically represent anything, any specific culture in that mural, to kind of give it a little bit of ambiguity of to like who these people really are, so people can really see whoever they want to see. So I got a lot of people coming up to me and being like, oh, I'm so glad you're representing like Native Americans, I'm so glad you're representing you know, Mexican, I'm Chinese and Portuguese, like all these different people, just because there's just like some ambiguity there of to like who these people really represent. So
and I'll point out that how beautiful it is that you even went through that thought process, because I think there was roughly 6 or 8, I think there was 8 initial concepts submitted by different artists, all given the exact same criteria to start with. And the number of things that we received on the other murals that was actually factually incorrect. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, somebody trying to represent
like a herd of buffalo or something.
It was even a little bit more insensitive than that, but it was just like things that were like they just hadn't, it was just so clear that they hadn't done the research,
right.
and having the thought process of like, no, we're gonna paint a person, but we're not gonna give them a face, and we're not gonna give them a very distinct skin color, and, you know, so people can see what they want to see. Like, that was all Julie brought that to the group and was just like, I think this is a great way to meet all of these things. And many others did not do the research, and it showed.
Well, it's a classic. It's already a classic. It's been up there 3 years. It's a classic that will, you know, people will be looking at for 100 years. So let's talk about the one that you're working on at the IDES Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Is this in celebration of something? I know that the Holy Ghost Festival is happening this weekend. Is it for that?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily for that. I'm trying to get as much as I can done before, you know, Sunday. I don't think I'm going to get it done before then. I think it'll be maybe like 90-80% done.
You would have got it done if you didn't come in here for this.
Yeah, right.
That's what you're trying to say. Yeah, okay.
No, you're fine. No, I'm making some good progress, and it's really nice of them. They're not really giving me like a hard deadline or anything, so I can really take my time and make it like really, really like stand out and really like perfect and really detailed. And that piece is really cool because it looks kind of immersive.
Yeah.
Like it looks like you can literally walk into it, and there's this path like coming out at you, and it represents there's like a landscape of the Azores Islands, and you know, a half moon and this big ship, which originally a lot of the original immigrants that came here came on these whaling ships. So there's a whaling ship in there. And it's all in this blue color palette, which I got really inspired by those blue and white Portuguese tile patterns. Mm. And there's a lot of murals in Portugal that are made out of these tiles, and they're beautiful, and they're just blue and whites and dark blues, light blues, and it's so beautiful. I got so inspired by that. So I wanted to create something like that on that building. And so it's all in these like this blue color palette. And then it's going to be bordered by like these, I don't really know how to describe it without like a visual, but kind of like Portuguese tile designs like surrounding it. And then you got the Holy Ghost doves, and then a crown, and then the IDES like all spelled out in Portuguese, like on the bottom right side. So.
And if anybody wants a sneak peek of what it's going to look like when it's done, if you go to the City of Half Moon Bay website for the planning department agenda, it's actually pictures of the concept drawing mm-hmm. are in that packet. So you can actually see the whole full thing.
So I'm assuming that you got a commission. We won't talk about your money, but I assume you got a commission. Was this a contest kind of like the Cunha one where you had to, like, other people were submitting and they had to choose? Or did they come to you and say, world-renowned artist Julie Engelman, will you do our installation for us?
This was one where they came to me, yeah. And then I created a design, and then we tweaked it, and then now it's rolling and trying to get as much as I can done before this weekend, but we'll see.
I feel like in the 3 years since we had you on before, like I'm wondering how has your career taken off? Because I went to your website, looked like many of these large scale murals that I feel like have happened in the last 3 years. I just want to point out that I love the one that you did for Daly City Human Resources Department.
Oh yeah.
It has like a teens, 20s, like Art Nouveau type of feeling to it, and I was just shocked at like, this isn't for like the city of San Francisco. This is for Daly City Human Resources. Like, how did they get that through the like authorization process? Like, we're gonna get this super awesome artist to come and make this big mural for our human resources department, because it's a like, you know, your stuff is world class. It's a world class mural, and I'm not putting shade on Daly City or Human Resources, but it's just like you wouldn't think that something that awesome would be at a, like, you know, regular city Human Resources Department office.
Right.
Well, did you know that there's multiple murals in City Hall?
Half Moon Bay?
Yeah.
On the side?
No, on the inside, in the meeting rooms.
No, I have never been invited into a meeting room.
I'm not sure if...
I'm allowed in that building.
Just commiserating, they're not by our sweet, amazing Julie. They're quite a bit older, but yeah, there's like at least two, if not three, interior murals inside City Hall.
That's, Julie, if you ever go to Santa Barbara, which hopefully you'll do a mural there someday, if you ever go to Santa Barbara, go to the county courthouse there, in the Paseo there in downtown Santa Barbara, there are just these incredible, like, 360 panorama murals of the history of,
awesome.
Like, the coast side there
that's really cool.
Are just majestic in, like, kind of a mid-century modern type of muralist approach to it.
Cool.
So, like, not WPA kind of blocky, you know, like, populist peoples type of stuff, but more just kind of almost a classical artistic approach. And I feel like yours is a modern classical, in the sense that, like, classical representations of things, classical skill, but again with, like, a fresh approach to it, a vision on it that brings in these pieces, like you were mentioning for the IDES hall, that, like, in a way that makes sense. You're not just throwing a bunch of articles on there,
yeah.
like, here, this is all the things that represent the coastline.
Yeah.
You're weaving them into a cohesive image that you can look at and go, wow, that's an awesome thing. And then you can spend a half an hour looking at all the little things within it. And every time I walk by Cunha, I can't help myself. I stop and I just look at it for a minute, like, oh, there's something I didn't notice that before there.
Yeah.
So are you I'm hoping that your career has taken off in the last 3 years. It looks like you're getting a lot of work. Do you do much out? So you got something in Auburn, some stuff on the peninsula that we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Anything beyond that range? Are you getting calls to go to Hawaii or Australia or Europe or whatever to do work?
No, not yet. But hopefully in the future, that'd be pretty cool. But yeah, I definitely think my career is definitely just, like, growing. It's like it's not like a straight line up, but it's like up and down all the time. So, you know, sometimes I'll be, like, crazy busy. Right now I'm really, really busy. And then sometimes I'm, like, dead. And then it goes up again. And then, you know, but it's always just, like, it's an uphill climb. I say, like, over the last 2 years, I've definitely, like, accomplished a lot. And, yeah, like, the Daly City one, like, they found me through this other mural that I did in Colma, which is the biggest project I've ever done. It's this huge mural. It's 180 feet long, and it, like, takes up pretty much an entire block. And that one was to celebrate Colma's 100-year anniversary. So I definitely have a lot of history incorporated in there. And that was a really interesting project because Colma's, like, 90% cemeteries, right? So So it's definitely super unique. And there's, like, I painted these big, like, sculptures of angels, and there's, like, flowers and, like, stained glass pieces I tried to paint in there. So, yeah, that one was one of my favorites. But they, you know, I mean, it's just all word of mouth, right? And then the more stuff you do, people hear about you and, hey, can you do this? Or maybe you should, like, apply for this project. And, you know, it just... You know, the more projects you have, I guess the busier I'll get. But right now it's just kind of up and down.
Okay, people, we've got 2 minutes. I'm just going to say that we mentioned last week, and I was just there again last night, PFOG Antiques in Pacifica has a framed poster of your 2022 Pacifica Fog Fest.
Oh, yeah.
Going for over $200.
No way.
Yeah, and I would say, folks, if you've watched Antiques Roadshow and stuff, this is the exact kind of person that if you got a signed Julie Engelman print or something that she worked on, or if you could somehow get an original piece of artwork, that I really think that a Julie Engelman in, like, 15 or 20 years, like, that is going to mean something. And an original piece, that poster, that Fog Fest poster is beyond incredible. But I just want to point out a couple others here. Pedro Point Surf Club Grom Fest Volume 2. Like, how do I get one of those? That poster is badass. The concert poster you did for Hop Dogma, to me, rivals the Bill Graham posters. Maybe that was an inspiration, but just, you know, one of those. And that's the kind of thing. Somebody comes on Antiques Roadshow in 20 years with one of those, and the guy's going to be going, oh, yes, this is a Julie Engelman. Yes, this is from, you know, early in her career. This is blah, 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 blah. These are incredible pieces of art. You're an amazing artist. And I think... Your increased popularity and the people that are calling you, and like I said, seeing that framed Fog Fest poster for over $200, I really think that says a lot, Julie, about how people think about your artwork and your talent. And I really appreciate you coming on the show. I know you're busy,
yeah.
And I hope that you can come on again in the future.
Absolutely,
we're all
we've already identified another big wall. So hopefully more
really?
Meals to
oh,
come.
See?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're just okay.
Exciting.
Love it. Okay. Julie Engman, thank you for taking time out from your new mural at the IDES Hall on Main Street in Half Moon Bay. People go check that out. You can see her working on it today if you go by or this weekend. We've got the Holy Ghost Festival. We've got Mr. Cox's graduation at the retirement party at the OPL. Second annual Coast Summer Mic Series for Coastal Windage starts on Friday with Michelle Dragony. And I think there was one other thing. Oh, this weekend is the two-day opening for the salmon season at the harbor. Good luck, everybody. Hopefully you catch some fish. Julie, thank you. Great to see you.
You too.
Everybody, have a good summer. Crystalline, enjoy the Summer in Mic Series.
I will. So much fun.
We will post the schedule of the guest hosts on the Coastal Windage webpage at khmbradio.com later today. All right, everybody. Have a great week. Have a great weekend. Have a great summer. I'll see you in September. All right. Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast.